Hi, and welcome to the Workforce Management Show. My name is Johanna Fagerstedt, and I'm the Chief Marketing Officer of Quinyx. And I am very excited to have award-winning HR star Anna Cao joining the show today. Anna is responsible for global HR at Ericsson and their factories, and she's also the former head of HR sales operations at H&M. A warm welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
Great to have you here today.
Thanks for being here.
So we start every episode with some quick warm-up questions where you answer as quickly and as shortly as possible. Are you ready?
I am.
All right, let's go. So where are you from?
I'm from a small city in the western part of Sweden.
Which one?
Vänersborg or Vänersborg. Little Paris.
What's your current role?
I am heading up the people function in supply chain and production at Ericsson.
And what's your biggest achievement according to yourself?
Definitely becoming a mom. And that is also the greatest leadership training I have ever taken.
Definitely agree on that one. When do you enjoy work the most?
I must say, when I see my team and the leaders I work with, when they grow and develop, that is really enjoyable to see and very rewarding.
One key ingredient to create a happy workforce?
Inclusion.
And what makes a good leader?
I believe very much in showing empathy, giving trust, and being transparent.
What's your motto in life?
Dare to jump into the unknown and listen to my gut and inner voice.
Daring to jump into the unknown. We'll speak more about that later on in the episode, I think. If you were to pick your top three favorite KPIs or metrics, what would those be and why?
So yesterday we received our engagement survey result, and the three questions I immediately jump into and read comments is, I would recommend my manager, I feel free to challenge how things are done, and my work is meaningful to me. I think those three ingredients is very important to create an engaged workforce.
Who's the best leader you ever worked with?
I must say Fredrik Olsson, who is general director for H&M brand. He was my first leader when I entered my first leadership position, and I grew so much under his leadership.
And last one then, Börje Ekholm or Helena Helmersson?
I don't know them, but what I do know is both of them highly prioritize a strong company culture and leadership to provide strong business results. So I have to choose both of them.
Both of them. And also, yeah. For the audience, I would assume that most of you knows who these people are, but Börje Ekholm is the CEO of Ericsson and Helena Helmersson is the CEO of H&M.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Anna. So if you have any questions for Anna in the episode, you can write them in our Q&A function. Also, feel free to use the chat function for any comments or thoughts that you might have. So, Anna, you worked with HR in two truly global organizations, so Ericsson and H&M, two Fortune 500 companies, and two of the leaders in their respective industries. What are the key HR challenges that you find in these organizations?
So, firstly, I must say, when I left H&M, it was a couple of years ago. But at that time, we truly saw the rapid online disruption in the retail industry. And we needed to prepare for a multi-channel operations of going from mainly sales in physical stores to a shift in customer behaviors of shopping more multi-channel. And also the purpose of the physical store was reshaped, and the role of store workers as well to become more customer service and sales support driven. And at Ericsson, we also the last couple of years have faced disruption in our industry with development of 5G, digitalization, and geopolitics. So to answer your question of the key challenges for HR in this organization, it's very much about supporting transformation and organizations in change. And with business transformation, often comes with a lot of new competences and skills needed to meet future demands.
Mm. And I believe that the audience will recognize themselves in these challenges, because that is something that the pandemic has definitely highlighted, I'd say. So can you see a difference in what role HR plays in a retail organization compared to a large engineering and manufacturing company that you're in now?
So on a high level, not really, especially last couple of years where many industries are in big transformation. And talking about retailers with physical stores and manufacturing companies, I mean, the people are the key assets and staff planning is core to run efficient operations. So I think also in both industries, you see a lot of temporary workers and also external workforce in the stores and in productions. So I think you really need to work on the employee engagement to keep them around as long as possible and make them as engaged so that you don't struggle with the high turnover that temporary workers can also bring.
And that's so interesting. Let's speak more about that later as well on how to get that employee engagement. But going back to your current role, so you joined Ericsson in 2019. What was the mission that you got handed?
Well, the mission was really clear from day one. Considering the technology transformation in our business, the processes and our ways of working, we needed to digitally transform. For example, automating our production, we digitalize our supply value chain, which drives a shift in skills and competences. So also adding to that, the company directive was super clear. We will not longer go for big reduction programs that we have done in the past couple of years. We need to work with the people that we have, meaning also that we need to be intentional and proactive in our work. So that left me and my team with a mission, how to upskill and reskill an organization of almost 7,000 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a challenge. Where do you start?
Yeah, where do you start? So, I mean, also adding to that, our organization is not only huge with almost 7,000 people. We are also spread across 85 countries.
Oh, wow.
So it obviously becomes very large and complex. And I scratched my head for a couple of months before we landed in a roadmap and also how to tackle this. And where we did start was that we had a newly updated business strategy. So we mapped out what competences and skills we need for the coming years to achieve and execute on our business or supply strategy 2025. And we then built a competence-based workforce plan to see what type of job roles and competences do we need for the coming years, and also to what volumes do we need them. And here we quickly saw that it was new job roles that we needed to add, new competences that we previously haven't had in our organization. For example, business analysts, product owner, automation engineers, data scientists, agile coaches, and so forth. But we also saw that some of our current job roles were coming down in volume and demand, looking a couple of years ahead. That was the first thing that we did. And when we had done that mapping, the next step was to see, okay, so what gaps do we then? So sort of a gap analysis to identify where do we need to add competences? What job roles can we upgrade? And also see how we can I mean, also when you automate and digitalize, it's tasks being removed, but then you also need to manage the things that is still in the role. And here we saw a lot of soft skills being added as well across all job roles. So that mapping we did and that gap analysis, which resulted in two of our biggest job roles globally in supply, we needed to create an upskilling program for those job roles and make them ready to transform with a job role and continue working in that job role with the future demands in a couple of years when the job role has fully transformed. But as I said, we also saw new competences being added. So we then also created some reskilling programs for people to take the opportunity to take reskilling programs and be able to take the new job roles that we have added in our organization.
Sorry, just to interrupt you there. So you spoke about upskilling programs and then you've got reskilling programs that you put in place. What's the difference between the upskill and the reskill programs?
So the upskill is more that you learn something new, but it's not to that extent that you fully reskill yourself. It might be that you stay in the current job role, but you need to learn new tasks. So that is more of an upskill. A reskill is that you learn to do something maybe totally different and you need to learn maybe new type of skills and competences, which also often requires a longer period of training or practice. So for the upskilling programs that I talked about for our two biggest job roles, for those we see maybe a couple of hours or maybe 20, 40 hours of training. While for the reskilling programs, for example, we have created a reskilling program for product owners. So people can take this program during 9 months. Not full time though, but during 9 months, you spend a couple of hours each month. And after those 9 months, we hope that you will be able to take on a new job role that you haven't had before.
Oh, wow. And it's such an interesting and smart move, I'd say, that you said we're moving away from big reduction programs and instead we're focusing on the people we have. We focus on being proactive and look at how we can have a competence-based strategy. Because from what I reckon, if you're looking for business analysts, data engineers, and product owners, there are quite a lot of other companies also looking for those specific roles. So it will be difficult to find them. Correct. So what do you think on that? Is that something that you see on the market, that more and more companies are moving away from these big reduction programs?
I think we have to, because as you said, some of the future critical competences, all companies are looking for those, especially the more data and tech-driven competences. So if you have the possibility, like Ericsson, for example, we have more than 100,000 employees. We have a lot of super smart people. So centrally, what Ericsson centrally is doing now, I have only talked what we are doing locally in supply, but centrally Ericsson is also setting up huge AI and data re and upskilling programs to support that transformation within our company. And I think more companies have to go that path as well, if not already started.
And I remember when we chatted just briefly before going live here, I asked you which consultancy firm did you choose? So I'll ask that question again.
So far, we haven't engaged any consultancy firm. We have been developed everything in-house in supply. So I managed, since the competence shift is such a strategic, important topic for us, it's embedded in our supply strategy to ensure we have the right skills and competences for the future. So then it was easy for me to go to the leadership team and to the head of supply saying that, okay, if this is so prioritized and we have this huge challenge, we need to have resources. So I managed to get a full-time person to work, and she is from the business and she is sitting in the business, but we are working super closely, me and her, or and also my team, of course, and the learning team at Ericsson to sort of create this program.
And I mean, that's so impressive as well to do that big transformation strategy completely in-house. I was also thinking about another thing that we discussed before, and that was your way of working with a big vision for the company when it comes to the competences. You said, I'm not looking for what we need tomorrow. I'm not looking for what we need next year. I'm looking 2025 and beyond. Could you tell us more about that?
No, but I think it's important to not only stay here and now. I think it's important that you also take the time to look ahead. And as I said, be proactive and intentional. Also to get the people and the organization with you. It's super important that you are transparent. Where are we heading in terms of strategy? What will that mean for us in our operational model, in our ways of working? And what will it mean in terms for our people and the competences that we need? So we have chosen to be very transparent. We are just in the beginning of this journey, I must say as well, but we have chosen to be very transparent where what we see in a couple of years' time and how we can support along that way. And but also promoting a lot about it's in the end, it's an individual responsibility. As a company and as a learning and people function, we can provide with all of these type of programs, but in the end, it's up to the individual to actually take them and be curious and have a growth mindset and being willing to learn new things and also unlearn things that you might not need anymore.
And that's such an interesting topic, unlearning things. Where do you start doing that? And what has the reactions been in the organization when coming and being transparent about this shift that you're seeing coming that you're working on?
Yeah. Of course, we get a lot of questions. What we do, for example, is that we run open, what we call open talks. So a couple of weeks ago, my team and also my change lead, who is responsible for competence shift, we run an open talk with all employees in supply. And the open talk was no slides, and it was for all employees to ask the questions that they might wonder. And of course, we get questions of, will this mean reduction in headcounts and so forth? But then what's important for me then to respond is that we transparently share where we are heading, how we can support on that journey, what competences we see in the future being very relevant, and how can you start already today to explore that? And I just hope and believe that if we run all of those type of different forums where we transparently share those things, people will take the responsibility and also be engaged along the way.
And what was the reactions from the employees after your open talks and walking through the strategy?
We have been running open talks for a year now on different topics in the strategy and more general open talks as well. And the feedback is super positive. And we see in our engagement survey how communication is just increasing in scores from every time we run the engagement surveys.
And are there any fear in the organization? Are there any specific roles that you see will disappear or need to be completely reskilled?
I mean, taking production, for example, with more and more automation, of course, there will be roles in the production that we will not be able to re or upskill since when we automate, we instead of blue collar that often doesn't have an education or university degree, we now recruit automation engineers, and there we have a totally different shift in competences and skills. So some job roles we will not be able to re-or upskill.
And what's your take on that? Because we spoke about that briefly before as well, that you're seeing you're not really looking at any major shifts, but rather having like a soft shift in the competences.
Yeah. So what's really important for us when it comes to the job roles that we see might go down dramatically in a couple of years' time, it's to work with natural attrition. So when we have vacancies, we work super closely with the leaders to be intentional when not only maybe replace someone with a traditional backfill, but sort of think through, okay, so here I have a vacancy in a job role that might go down in demand. May I maybe use this headcount for another position in my team or in my organization that will be more increasing in demand? So we try to be super intentional and not to end up in redundancies.
I think it's very inspirational and such a smart strategy to have that. And I guess that by looking at 5-10 years ahead, it's possible to do that, because then you can kind of like be in the forefront of things.
Yeah. But I also would like just to mention, so even though we run several different programs right now, looking at the 70-20-10 model for how we are learning new things in best possible way, trainings is not the key. It's actually 70% of our learning comes from practicing. So that's why we have also now initiated a global virtual job rotation and job shadowing program that we will launch very shortly. And that is because we see an increased demand of having end-to-end understanding or cross-functional understanding of our organization and how we operate. But at the moment, we have very low tenure and rotation among our employees. People are very satisfied with working for Ericsson and very satisfied with their roles. But being in this transformation that we are, we benefit from having more rotation that we actually have today. So that's why
luxury problem, right? Or challenge.
So that's why we want to launch this program to hopefully engage people to be more curious, to explore, and maybe we see more cross-functional movements within our organization as well. And by having a maximum 3 months of job shadowing, we have agreed with finance that we don't need to move the salary cost during this period of time. So that was also super important for us. It must be easy, it must be flexible, and it must help people to take the step to actually join this. So I'm very excited to see the outcome of that.
So how does that work in practice? You have lots of hearts now popping up, unless you see them. I don't know if it's visible on your screen. People, it seems like the audience loves it. But so virtual job rotation, you mentioned that it's 3 months. It's the cost base stays in the department where it is, which makes it easy to do, quite flexible. So more in details, how does this work and how would other companies who are looking for trying something similar, like where do they start? Could you be a bit more into the details?
Yeah.
We're also HR nerds here today.
So we haven't finished this project and launched yet. I have a super awesome team working on this right now to complete it. But what we do want is that we create a SharePoint where we will post if it's a job rotation or if it's a job shadowing opportunity. And so we are gathering from managers, if they have any such opportunities, we post them on this SharePoint, and then our people can go into this SharePoint and apply for those opportunities. And of course, it needs to be agreed between the two managers, but that is how we will run it.
And it will then be, so for the job shadowing, it means that you follow a colleague or look into, learn their work, so to speak. And for job rotation, does that mean that two colleagues switch jobs with each other for a limited time period?
Correct. Wow. So the job shadowing will be more shorter. It's maybe a few couple of weeks. And as you said, you shadow your colleague. But the job rotation, it's up to max 3 months. And then you rotate with each other.
Wow. And you said it's virtual. Does this mean that everyone is staying in their 85 countries, right?
Yes.
In their current countries. So with the new kind of like working from home possibilities and the digital world opening up, they are doing the work, but remotely, I guess.
Yes, correct. Correct.
Wow. That's and what are the benefits that you see coming out of this initiative?
I hope both to increase the cross-functional knowledge in our organization, but I also hope that managers that maybe play it safe today when they recruit might see from this rotational program that you can actually bring someone, a more wild card, that is not sort of the super perfect candidate and profile for the position, to bring new perspectives, and those new diversity of perspectives will actually create you to be even better as a team and perform even stronger. So wow. That will open up the mind among the leaders as well.
So really increase diversity and also potentially challenge all truths?
Yes, correct. But let's see, we haven't started yet. We will start we will launch it in 1 to 2 months time.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to invite you back here so you can tell us about the results when you're done. So cool. So just right after joining Ericsson, I know that you also get the mission of planning for this future competence shift and setting up this state-of-the-art factory in less than 18 months. Could you tell us more about that and more details about kind of like setting up that factory, which was also, I guess, not that long after the pandemic hit, or kind of like in the middle.
Yeah, so the background is 2 weeks after joining Ericsson, our CEO, Börje, he took the decision that we should start local 5G radio production in US. And we were to build this not only regular production site, this were to be a state-of-the-art factory. That in this factory, we were to showcase all Ericsson's hardware and software products. So the factory needed to quickly being built, and we had roughly 12 to 18 months to execute.
Oh, wow.
To have the factory up and running.
Mission impossible.
Yeah. And 18 months later, we actually managed to deliver our first 5G radio to our American customer. And from an HR point of view, I was asked to ensure that we provide a high-tech employee experience. Quite a stressful demand to receive when you are 2 weeks newbie in the company. I had never worked with production before. So that was a huge challenge. And one of the immediate challenge I saw was that we were to onboard a lot of people before the site or the factory was not even ready or built yet.
Oh, wow. How do you even do that?
How do you do that? And I mean, add to that was also that locally in US, we didn't have any production since before, which means that we didn't even have colleagues with production expertise. And it's not sustainable from a cost or environmental point of view to fly people to our other sites in the world, in Estonia or in China. So then it came to me when I was flying back from this meeting in Tallinn and got all those expectations on my shoulders, that why can't we just virtually transfer people to the sites that we have? So social VR became the solution to onboard more than 100 people into a production environment at Ericsson, but you as a newcomer were in Dallas, but you were actually virtually transferred to Tallinn. And in Tallinn, you met with our head of production, head of operational efficiency, and they had in virtual reality sort of your onboarding and training.
Oh, wow. So more in details, did you send them VR glasses? Did you go in and build up your Estonian factory in VR and had like your colleagues joining in simultaneously?
So we pre-recorded in 360 different movies and or station in our site in Tallinn. So we had all the VR glasses in Dallas in the office, but with this solution, the head of production, he could virtually join as an avatar overlaid in those 360 videos. So even though it was a pre-recorded video, someone could say, hey, I have a question about that assembly line there. Can you pause? We post the recording or the pre-recorded movie. And then they just paused the film and had sort of in-depth conversations around it because he was joining live as an avatar.
Wow, in comes the head of, head of the factory as an avatar.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. And from doing this, I mean, you get a lot of attention after and great PR, I'd say. Lots of people have looked into this initiative as being kind of like the future of HR and future of onboarding. And you actually won the prestigious award called the Global Lighthouse Award by the World Economic Forum. Could you tell us more about that? And congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And the award of being a Global Lighthouse was not because of virtual onboarding, I must say.
Okay.
But of course, that was part of the application of becoming a Global Lighthouse. So for everyone that doesn't know what the Global Lighthouse is, every year at World Economic Forum, McKinsey recognize the future operations of the fourth industrial revolution. Companies with specific production sites that are shaping the future of production and that work with a lot of digital tools and to set up this ecosystem of this factory. And then our smart factory in Dallas was recognized this year by McKinsey. So now we are part of this Global Lighthouse community. Globally, which is super prestigious. We are extremely proud for this because we had only had operations for less than 1 year when we were nominated. So in this factory, we have a lot of high-tech solution and everything is connected with Wi-Fi. We have no cables at all in this factory, which is super impressive. But when you then apply for becoming a Global Lighthouse, you sort of describe how you work, what type of devices and how your ecosystem is being built. But being a requirement to become a Global Lighthouse is how you work with the development of your people to ensure the highly skilled expertise that needs to be when working with an Industry 4.0. So here, of course, the virtual reality onboarding was part of showing how we develop people, and in this case, our newcomers.
Mm. So it sounds like a huge tech focus. It's Industry 4.0, smart factories, lower emissions. What role does HR play here and how can HR contribute?
Yeah, I think firstly, you really need to be curious and understand the business that you're operating in. And for me and my team, I mean, we support an organization in transformation. So our focus right now to enable the technology transformation and development is to see, okay, how do we work? how do we operate? And now we are scaling the agile principles more and more in our organization to hopefully become even more innovative, creative, fast in execution, customer centric, and so forth. So agile, I think, is super important. And that was actually what McKinsey gave us as feedback when becoming the Global Lighthouse, that technology is actually shifting and developing from one day to another. So it's all about how you mobilize your culture and your people and the ways of working. Mm-hmm. And the way we work with agile in that smart factory and now scaling in our organization as such, that is one key that we were recognized for. So we are now reskilling and upskilling ourselves in the people community on how to become more agile and how to support an agile organization.
Oh, wow. And it also seems to go hand in hand with what you said about creating a growth mindset, like being agile, having a growth mindset. But also what I came to think about is really what I see as kind of like the one joint denominator of all our workforce management shows, that all the great leaders who've attended said that the one key ingredient that you need to focus on to become successful are your people. Mm. It's your culture.
Yeah.
It's kind of like mobilizing, empowering them to really reach their full potential, and then you'll be successful.
I fully agree.
And it's such, I think it all comes back to that over and over again, it seems like. So, and in the, speaking about previous episodes, in the previous episode with Janine LeBrun, director at Nike, and also a screenwriter and movie producer who's been featured at Netflix, among other things, she spoke about the power of daring to do it and just get out there. What's your take on just do it? And also on the other side of the coin, daring to fail.
I think even since I was a child, I have never been afraid of failing. I am very competitive as a person, but I'm also at the same time, I'm not afraid of failing in public. And I think throughout my career, I have had leaders and colleagues around me. So when I fail, they are there to support me and it's okay. And people share their stories of failure. So I think I have always felt I am in a very safe place. So that has continuously driven me to stretch myself and sometimes jump into the unknown. And sometimes I totally fail, but then I learn from it and I move on. So I think throughout the years, I have built that confidence of failing, that it's safe to do this if you have the right people around you.
And that's also going back to the growth mindset. I guess sometimes that might be the best way to grow, to fail fast and learn from it. So what would you say is the single most important component to get the edge over your competition in highly competitive industries?
It must be, since technology changes so quickly, regardless of the industry operating. And that is also what we can be sure of, what the future will hold, is that we will be in constant transformation and shift in technology. So with that said, it comes down to the culture and the people that you have. They will be, or that will be your competitive advantage as a company. Having a culture where you have a safe environment to fail, to learn, a culture of growth mindset, a culture of high transparency and giving trust in your people, I think will be super important components to be able to outperform your competitors.
Mm. Transparency, trust, and also growth mindset.
Yeah. And a safe environment.
Safe environment. Thank you. So we've actually got some time for questions from the audience. And I'm going to start with one question here from Frederick. So, and also if you have some questions, just feel free to write them in the questions function or in the chat function. But starting off with a question from Frederick, what was the biggest difference working with HR at Ericsson compared to working with HR at H&M? Were there different metrics and were there different challenges that you saw?
I think H&M is a fantastic company when it comes to culture and how you sort of constantly every day talk about the values, you evaluate your people of the values, and also the focus on people leadership. That really impressed me and I learned so much from it. Joining Ericsson, it always takes some time to get to know a culture in depth. I have only been 2 years, so now I really see how embedded our culture is at Ericsson. But what I really think is one of Ericsson's super competitive advantage is how good we are in the people processes in terms of total rewards, the workforce planning. We have such a strong ecosystem of tools around us. So that of course have shaped the reality when working at H&M, you're operating in this super strong culture, and at Ericsson, of course, it's an engineering company and you have a lot of great data. We have data of everything. So that is also, of course, shaping your daily work as an HR, having all those data.
And a question from my end there to follow up on that, because I would assume that in huge enterprises like Ericsson or H&M, compared to Quinyx, for example, being a tech company with a couple of hundred employees, we would, at a tech company, you would be able to move quite quickly, and with a couple of hundred employees, you'd be able to shift focus if needed quite fast. But if in a large enterprise organization, it takes some time. But from what I've noticed from the outside, with both H&M and Ericsson, you're still managing to be fast moving and be in the forefront. What's the secret to that?
So I think at H&M, it's the entrepreneurial culture that enables you to move super fast. And I would say at Ericsson, we are a tech company. We need to move fast in technology and we are used to do that. Mm.
Wow. And so lots of questions are starting to come in here. Is that also potentially empowering them, please, and having the decision-making close to the people who actually work in the front line, kind of like empowering the front line? That's Jim Donald, former CEO of Starbucks, who was also joining the show a couple of weeks ago or months ago, talked about really empower the frontline, make them give them the chance to make decisions.
Yeah.
It's something like that I hear.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, it's super empowering to be part of a company. I mean, both H&M and Ericsson are plus 100,000 employees and still feeling that I can impact my surrounding and the way I operate. It's super rewarding and engaging. Mm. So, and once again, it comes down to the culture. Mm.
All right. So question from Martin here. Did you set out a specific and quantifiable goal from the start? And what are the big benefits that can be quantifiable that you've achieved?
Was that a general question or linked to?
I would assume it's linked to the potentially onboarding project or the factory project. Let's speak about both.
Sorry, the question once again. If I set a target,
if you had any specific results, like quantifiable goals from the start, and how you work towards reaching them.
So for the factory, but definitely to onboard people as soon as possible, and with the sort of the highest engagement. So for the onboarding, for example, we did a survey how well they perceive this type of training, if they learned or what they felt about being in this virtual world. And we got 85 in net promoting scores. So that is super high if you're used to work with MPI scores. So, but I mean, we had to move so quickly and just make it happen for that factory. So of course we had targets in recruitments and engagement and so on, but we just needed to move the needle super fast.
Wow. And when it comes to the competence planning program and the competence shift, what were the metrics and the specific goals that you had there?
So we are actually setting the metrics now as we speak to see whether how we should measure what people actually have gained from taking those trainings. If we were to sort of have certificates that I have now taking this reskilling or upskilling training and sort of a proof of you have gained what we want them to gain. So we are looking into certificates at the moment. And also, of course, we will track, we just piloting some of the trainings, so they will be fully launched during fall. And then we will, of course, track how many people that are going through those trainings.
Mm. Cool, thanks. Another question from Matthias. Question about learning. What are your favorite active learning techniques opposed to passive learning? So like listening and reading, for example, workshops, role plays, coaching and others. And why?
I really like personally micro learning in terms of podcasts or TED Talks. And I also like to have retrospectives together with the peers. So we, as I spoke about, we're doing this upskilling in Agile for the people function. So some of us, we read this book, Agile People by Pia-Mia Thorén. And then we had sort of retrospective meetings. I think we had three in total to reflect on what we have read and what we can learn from it and how we can apply it. Ah. So that type of learning, I like to sort of take it yourself, reflect, and then interact and discuss with others.
Love that. That's, I would say, similar to marketing. We speak a lot about snackable contents of marketing. And this will be similar to that, snackable learning. So you take it in pieces.
Yeah.
And also I love the way of applying it and really and having active retrospects and speaking about how do we apply this in practice to really take the next step and put it into action. All right, so lots of more questions coming up here. How do you measure or estimate the soft values, such as a strong culture, for example, since it's so important? But how do you know that you have a strong culture? That's a great question.
So Ericsson launched, it's 2 years now, a huge culture transformation program called Ericsson on the Move, which is focusing on five soft skills. And in our engagement surveys that we run twice per year, we actually measure to what extent people feel that we are being showing empathy and humanness, if we are considered to execute speedily, if we are fact-based in our decisions, if we are collaborating and so forth. So that is one way. But what we also have done, super exciting project that I haven't discussed, talked about today. We are running a diversity and inclusion use case right now in Group Supply, where we actually run an inclusion survey to get measurables of the more soft parts and what can't be measured that easy in data. So then we had a survey of 12 questions measuring if you feel that leaders in supply are prioritizing diversity, if we are evaluating, or if we feel that diverse perspectives are being included, a lot of different questions. So that has been super interesting to get that feedback. And we have now decided to run yearly inclusion surveys to sort of measure that we have the right type of culture that truly prioritizes the importance of diversity and inclusion.
Mm. Wow. Any other questions there in the survey that you can share for the audience if they would like to run their own?
Please reach out to me and I will be happy to share.
Brilliant. Thank you. Great. It's soon time to wrap up, but if you'd leave us with one key learning from today's episode, what would that be?
In terms of competence shift, I would say start early and be transparent, because that will help you doing the transition needed. Don't wait for the big bang, having things to communicate, and maybe the time frame is shortened. Dare to speak about what we see for the business and for the people and the organization and the competences in the coming years, so that you provide people with that information so that they can take fact-based decisions and responsibility for their own career and development.
Great. Thank you. And for me, to summarize my learnings and potentially how to build a great company culture, is to have a high level of transparency, like you said, make sure to have a high level of trust, install a growth mindset and encourage that, and create the processes to support that, and make sure to have a safe environment where you feel free to take risks.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. And finally, if you were to recommend another leader to join this show, who would that be?
I would say Kristina Raschau at H&M Group, leading the HR function for Group Business Tech.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. We'll have to reach out to her.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's time to wrap up. Thank you so much for sharing your insights here with us today, Anna. It's been a true pleasure having you here.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you everyone for joining the show today. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes and exciting guests.
Bye.